Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, November 14th. Senate race hits warp speed. Sparks, Quackenbush, Bradley vie for Seliger's old seat, by Bob Campbell. The horse race is on to succeed retiring Texas Senator Cal Seliger of Amarillo with Kevin Sparks of Midland, Jesse Quackenbush of Amarillo, and Stormy Bradley of Kahoma, working the mammoth newly realigned 31st Senatorial District for backing in the March 1st Republican primary. There is as yet no Democrat in the race to represent the district's 45 counties in Austin. Having served since 2004, Seliger had accrued increasing disgruntlement from the GOP's more conservative wing, and he said the deletion of four counties in the Panhandle and the addition of 12 in the Permian Basin had made another candidacy untenable. He will serve through next year. Sparks, president of Discovery Operating, said last Monday that he had been campaigning hard for 2 months, and he was having a private fundraiser Tuesday night in Odessa in his effort to ally Odessa and Midland, which has historically proved difficult for regional candidates from the basin. He's been endorsed by former President Donald Trump. Odessans haven't backed Midlanders and vice versa, Sparks noted, which has figured into candidates like Seliger winning. The 57-year-old business administration graduate of the University of Texas at Austin said his campaign counters a disturbing national trend. When you look at everything going on around our country, it's clear that we have to start standing up for our conservative values, he said. We have a significantly different culture in the basin and panhandle than a lot of other places, and we have a national media trying to squelch the values of the larger portion of our nation. If we don't think it can happen in Texas, we're kidding ourselves. Sparks' father, Don, was among the Senate field in 2004 when Seliger was first elected. We're working hard to connect with as many people as we can all across the district, the candidate said. Odessa and Midland are in large part the same community, and we'll be stronger when we speak as one voice. What one community does absolutely affects the other. Sparks said there is currently no state senator with a background in the energy industry, but one is sorely needed to work with oil patch reps like Brooks Landgraf of Odessa and Tom Craddock of Midland. We don't have a single senator with any oil and gas experience, and it makes no sense to be debating without anybody who has the expertise to talk intelligently about those issues, he said. There is a disconnect between the I-35 corridor and the people out here in West Texas, so a lot of legislation gets passed with the mindset of those metro communities. Sparks has relatives who farm and ranch at Spearman, Groover, and Sunray, and Discovery Operating has interests in Hansford, Ochiltree, Sherman, and Lipscomb counties in the Panhandle. I've been there a lot, and I intend to represent the whole district, he said. I was in Amarillo and Perryton 2 weeks ago, and I'll be headed back there next week. When you're in the oil field in the wintertime up there, you'd better have your insulated coveralls on. With Texas population increase between 2010 and 2020, from 25,145,561 to 29,145,505, each of its 31 senators, the maximum number of whom is set by the state constitution, must now represent 940,178 people, up from 811,147 10 years ago, according to Ballotpedia. The filing deadline for the primaries is December 13th. Quackenbush is a 59-year-old criminal defense and personal injury attorney who ran for the 31st district seat in 04, but only to air his concerns about oil man T. Boone Pickens' panhandle water exportation plans, said the University of Houston Law Center graduate. This time he's running flat out to say the Second Amendment should be strenuously protected. Critical race theory, CRT, should not be taught in schools, and the Texas legislature's new anti-abortion bill is a waste of time and money because it will not withstand legal challenges. One definition of CRT is that racism is neither prejudice nor individual bias, and that racism is part of the American legal system, in which it is supported by established policies and procedures, according to references. I'd like to criminalize the teaching of CRT and require the immediate and permanent suspension of the licenses of any teachers who cross the line and teach it, Quackenbush said. We should make it a felony because it is encouraging racism. I'm pro-life, but until Roe v. Wade is repealed, I'm against gratuitously going out there and wasting millions of dollars just to test the waters with a law that is obviously unconstitutional while senselessly adding a severe crisis for women who seek that type of health care. Texas abortion law, Senate Bill 8, allows any private citizen to sue an abortion provider or any other person, including a driver, who helps a woman get an abortion after a fetus heartbeat becomes detectable, among other features. The bill was sponsored by Republican Representatives Shelby Slauson of Stephenville, Dustin Burroughs of Lubbock, Stephanie Click of Fort Worth, Briscoe Kane of Houston, and Jeff Leach of Plano. Quackenbush said Texas politicians are promising to lower property taxes, but he would take emphatic action to do so. Asked about his public reprimand on February 4, 1994, by the State Bar of Texas, he said the dispute related to a client who had paid him $500 and his refusal of the client's request for a refund. The bar thought I should give the money back after my staff had spent hours and hours on the case, and I think I gave him a couple of hundred dollars, he said. Spokeswoman Claire Reynolds of the bar's Office of the Chief Disciplinary Counsel in Austin gave the Odessa American the report on the 1994 hearing, which says Quackenbush committed professional misconduct with regard to the complaint by filing Rule 1.04A of the Texas Disciplinary Rules of Professional Conduct, by collecting an unconscionable fee, and by violating Rule 8.04A3, by misrepresenting that the interest charged on a promissory note was instead a service charge. Bradley owns a steel manufacturing company, Bulldog Steel, a construction company, Metal Solutions, and a property development firm, B4 Investment Properties, in Big Spring, 65 miles east of Odessa on I-20. She is a Howard College nursing graduate and a board member of the Cahoma Independent School District, Scenic Mountain Medical Center, and Big Spring Chamber of Commerce. The Republican Party has had control of the Texas House and Senate and the Lieutenant Governor's and Governor's Office for over 20 years, said Bradley, 32. We can pass anything we want, and yet the priorities of our Republican platform are not being met because we have a lot of talkers and not a lot of doers. Referring to Governor Greg Abbott's COVID-related restrictions that he rescinded last March, Bradley said, our governor just forced mandates on us and shut down businesses, and no one in the House or Senate did anything about it. We relinquished our constitutional obligation to protect our liberties, and I got angry and frustrated, like a lot of people, because it almost cost me my business. It did cost several others their businesses. I decided that someone with courage and integrity needed to stand up, and here I am. They're going to lower property taxes in every session, and here lightly our representatives and senators will secure our borders and nothing is done about that. We have a chain link fence that people can drive their cars through, and they are. What good is that? Ector County Democratic Chairman Hannah Horick said no Democrat was making the race, but party leaders were looking for one. We are certainly working on it because we're interested in challenging every race, Horick said. I don't know of anyone locally, but we'll contact Amarillo. It's hard when the senatorial district is the size of an entire state. Subject to court challenges, the new map deletes the Panhandle counties of Collingsworth, Donley and Wheeler and Pampa and Gray County, where the 2020 population was 21,886. It adds Borden, Koch, and Crane counties, La Mesa and Dawson County, Arion, Mitchell, Reagan, and Schleicher counties, Snyder and Scurry County, Sterling and Upton counties, and Monahans and Ward County. It now includes the counties of Andrews, Armstrong, Bailey, Borden, Briscoe, Carson, Castro, Cochran, Koch, Crane, Dallam, Dawson, Deep Smith, Ector, Gaines, Glasscock, Hall, Hansford, Hartley, Hemp Hill, Howard, Hutchinson, Arion, Lipscomb, Loving, Martin, Midland, Mitchell, Moore, Ochiltree, Oldham, Palmer, Potter, Randall, Reagan, Roberts, Schleicher, Scurry, Sherman, Sterling, Swisher, Upton, Ward, Winkler, and Yoakum. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Sunday. On Friday, November 12th, in Odessa, God called William Roger Bryant home to his eternal reward of 85 years of age. Roger was born in Stanford, Kentucky, on August 20th, 1936. The second child and first son of Geneva and James T. Bryant. He is survived by his spouse Carla Jean Bryant of Odessa, three children, William Stephen Bryant and Christy, Susan Bryan Sneer and Todd, and Sharon Bryant Rose and Mike, eight grandchildren, his sister-in-law Maria Bryant, nephews and nieces. He is preceded in death by his parents, two siblings, James Leslie Bryant and Joyce Lynn Davies, and Carlton. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Alzheimer's Association, the Texas Lions Camp, First Baptist Church, Permian Basin Mission Center, or the charity of your choice. A celebration of life will be held on Monday, November 15th at 5 p.m. at First Baptist Church in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Burton Clark Miller, 77, passed away peacefully at his home on November 11th after a hard-fought battle with prostate cancer. Burt was born on December 28, 1943, in Cooperstown, New York, to Clark Fisher Miller and Elizabeth Collision Miller. Burt is preceded in death by his parents and by his brothers Kenneth E. Miller and John A. Miller. Survivors include his loving wife of 56 years, Linda, brother Frank E. Miller, Odessa, daughter Pamela Pipes and husband Chris in Fort Davis, daughter Denise Branham and husband Jerry of Odessa, son Dwayne Miller and wife Tina, Flint, Michigan. Three grandchildren, great-grandsons, several nieces, nephews, and cousins. No services are planned at this time. In lieu of flowers, please donate in memory of Bert to the American Cancer Society or Home Hospice of Odessa. Condolences may be made to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Joanne Louise Melport Williams, age 85, passed from this life on Friday, November 12th. She was born on Wednesday, September 9th, 1936, in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, to Bernice and John Melport. Those left to cherish her memory are her daughter Robin Granberry, sister Norma Jean McBride, 4 grandchildren, 7 great-grandchildren, and many family and friends. Joanne was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Hollis Williams, sons Johnny Williams, Hollis Williams Jr., and daughter Karen Hooper. No services are scheduled at this time. Condolences may be made to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, November 15th. Holy Cross signs long-term lease. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Holy Cross Catholic High School has signed a long-term lease with the Way Retreat Center in Midland for its permanent home. Quote, "It's a blessing, a true blessing, to finally have somewhere we can call home," head of school Carolyn Gonzalez said. When the boards of school and the retreat center got together and worked through a deal, Gonzalez said they were able to let their families know that they are at the retreat center for the long term. Michael LaMonica, a deacon with San Miguel Catholic Church who owns the land the school sits on, said the school and retreat complement each other. LaMonica, who is an oil field engineer, said they broke ground on the center in 2016 and hosted their first retreat in 2018. But when COVID hit, it decimated the center. No one booked any events and everybody canceled. Quote, "It was terrible. We did not lose anybody. We went through a fundraiser to try to get enough money just to keep the lights on and not lay off anybody. And then we got the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program money. That helped us too," LaMonica said. He added that he was on the steering committee to form a Catholic high school 15 years ago and stepped down, but kept track of the efforts from a distance. Then he was inspired and called Holy Cross to ask what they thought about moving to the center and collaborating. Quote, "The retreat center would not survive without the high school, and the high school needed a place. It was very difficult to raise money during COVID as well," LaMonica said. Spokeswoman Stephanie Hill said Holy Cross moved to the Way Retreat Center in January 2020. Quote, "We were operating under a temporary lease, and it didn't take long for both organizations to figure out that this was a great fit that complemented both of us. We've just recently signed a long-term lease that will put us here at least for 50 years with renewal options. This is our permanent place and a beautiful place for us to grow and develop," Hill said. As the facility sits today, Hill said they were able to serve 115 students. Their goal is 400 students. Quote, "But in order to do that, we will need to build additional facilities, so we are working on a master plan right now and excited to start the development," she said. It was a sigh of relief for Holy Cross to have a place to call home. Quote, "Our mission is Christ-centered," LaMonica said, "and there are many roads that lead one to Christ, so our mission at the retreat center was to create an environment where people can get away," end quote. The architecture is meant to make people feel like they aren't in West Texas. Quote, "We want people to feel like they're in an oasis. This is why this looks the way it looks. And because we're non-denominational, we wanted any Christian group to be able to come here, and we've been very successful bringing in many different denominations. We've actually had some pastors who have come here and spent a day in retreat." And so that's where we were, LaMonica said. Quote, "We were also a wedding venue. Very few weddings. We kept the number of weddings here because it's not for weddings, it's for retreats. But we've had those events, had some really cool other events too that were very different, very unique, that being out here in the country, it worked out great," LaMonica said. Holy Cross currently has 40 students in grades 9 through 12. Quote, "This is our first year to have seniors, so this will be our first graduating class. We're so excited. We also have dual credit options for all of our students. So it's expected that most of our students will also graduate with an associate's degree. And we work with Midland College and Odessa College," Hill said. In order to serve Odessa and Midland, they have a bus that goes to Odessa, picks them up, and drops them off every day, she said. Quote, "Since we are a little bit outside of town, we also pick up the Midland students if they would like to. We have a time at St. Stephen's that the parents can drop the students off there, and then on the way from Odessa, they stop by the Midland location and pick up the Midland students," Hill said. While the school has halted its capital campaign for a new building, Hill said there are exciting opportunities coming up. Quote, "We will be building a gym first, and that is exciting for both organizations too, because our students will be using it, and it's also going to be available to the community, just as the retreat center is," Hill said. A schedule will be needed. Quote, "I think it's going to be a popular building for all," she added. LaMonica said it is certainly needed. Quote, "And I was very supportive, and still am, for it to be built. The kids need a gym," he said. Hill added that the community needs it too. LaMonica said a football field will also be added eventually. Quote, "We do have football, volleyball, basketball," Hill said. "But right now, students have to go from gym to gym for practices, so they will be ready for it." Quote, "And then eventually, as our student enrollment grows, we'll need to be looking into additional buildings at that time too," Hill said. LaMonica said the school was going out for contractors now to get a cost on the project. Quote, "There's already been that pledge of $1 million. The estimate is about $3 million, but they really don't have it nailed yet until they get the contractors responding," LaMonica said. He added that there's uncertainty about the cost because you don't know whether you can get the materials or what the cost will be. Quote, "That's a really tough one right now. I say that, and I've been here since 1984, and I've lived through three booms and busts. It's nothing really different," LaMonica said. The way the retreat center is set up is almost like a college campus with separate small houses that are used as classrooms. There also is a memorial garden built for those who have lost children. LaMonica said it was a gift. Quote, "It is a healing retreat for those who have lost a child, so there's a memorial garden out here for them for quiet. It's very unique. The other thing is that big hill. The hope is that we build a tomb. And it's just for people, especially teenagers, to go into to reflect on, meditate on the resurrection of Christ," LaMonica said. They also would like to build an amphitheater for outdoor concerts, for example. Quote, "Our goal was to make sure we have high school age, junior high age retreats out here, and now it's going to lend itself even better because a lot of things we'll be building will all enhance that," LaMonica said.
Visiting Dad while unvaccinated. To your good health for Saturday. Dear Dr. Roach, I am one of four daughters, ages 69 to 61. Our dad is 95 and still lives independently, although one of us four girls comes each night to have dinner with him. He doesn't drive anymore, and we do all of his shopping and errands for him. He is frail and has Parkinson's disease. Our dad and three of the girls have been fully vaccinated, and those old enough have appointments for the booster. The youngest refuses to get vaccinated. She has never received a flu shot, and a COVID vaccine is out of the question. She is a conspiracy theorist, does not believe in science or medicine, and says the vaccine is a non-starter. She also told us that her seeing and being with Dad is non-negotiable. Dr. Roach writes, There are sure to be strong opinions about your predicament. However, my personal opinion is that you and your vaccinated sisters are correct, and that the risk to your father right now is too great. I would not allow her to visit without being vaccinated. Any person with her travel history and possible exposure should also either wear a mask or be tested for COVID-19, in addition to vaccination before visiting your dad. I'm afraid there are many people who believe what your youngest sister believes, as I get letters every day from people with similar beliefs. Although it isn't always comfortable breathing through a mask, nurses, physicians, and other healthcare professionals have been doing so every day now for almost 2 years. I can't say whether your dad would survive a case of COVID-19. I've had patients in their 90s do so. However, his risk would be very high, especially considering his frailty. I realize this will cause stress in your family, but in my opinion, the risk to his health is too great.
Widowed spouses find comfort and potential in each other. Dear Abby, a lady friend of mine I've known for more than 20 years and I recently lost our spouses to COVID in the same hospital, 4 rooms apart from each other. During the 2.5 weeks that our spouses were in the hospital, we visited, prayed for, and offered comfort to each other as well as after their passing. Throughout the years, we have always had a slight attraction to each other, and we realize that it's still there. We know each other's flaws as well as good points. Keep in mind, we were very much in love with our spouses and were able to openly talk about them as well as grieve for them. We also find a great sense of comfort in each other's company, but over time our physical attraction has grown. I'm 64 and she's 57, and we're both experienced in the game of life. My question is, it's been only 2 months since our spouses died, so would it be wrong for us to start seeing each other on a romantic basis, or is this too soon? Also, there's the question of being judged by others. Signed, New Widower in Florida. Dear New Widower, please allow me to offer my sympathy for your loss. You and this lady are not strangers. You are adults who have known each other for a long time. If the two of you have feelings for each other, there's nothing stopping you from exploring your relationship to see where it leads. Understand that this is a process that will take more time and should not be rushed. Please don't allow your lives or your decisions to be ruled by what others might think. Dear Abby, a couple we occasionally double date with likes to meet for dinner. Usually we both throw out a few suggestions, see what sounds good, and go from there. Recently, though, my friend chooses the same restaurant and then announces they want to buy us dinner. The problem is we don't care for that restaurant as they only serve one type of food, soup. I think it's her way of controlling the cost of the meal. I have no problem with finding other, less expensive places to go that offer options so we can all be satisfied. When I suggest something different, she goes blank and can't think of anything, and I can tell she doesn't like my suggestions. I also do not want them to buy our dinner because, again, I know finances are tight. My husband and I order appetizers for the table, and we ask for them to be placed on our bill, and that seems to be okay. How do we continue to double date and not have the selection process create tension that spoils our night out? Signed, Not Appetizing in the West. Dear Not Appetizing, you can accomplish that by speaking up. Be honest with your friend. Tell her you don't mind having dinner at the soup place once in a while, but you would prefer to go to a place that offers more variety. And while you're at it, tell her that although they are generous in wanting to pay for your meals, you and your husband prefer to split the check 50-50 or alternate picking up the tab.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.